Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're looking at Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 12, text 4. Apipalad dharma raja pitravad ranjayan prajaha nispraha sarva kamevya krishna padanu sevaya apipalad dharma raja pitravad ranjayan prajaha nispraha sarva kamevya krishna padanu sevaya apipalad dharma raja pitravad ranjayan praja nispraha sarva kamepya krishna padam sevaya. Sutuvacha. Sri Suta Goswami said, apipalat administered prosperity. Dharmaraja, King Yudhisthira. Pitravat, exactly like a father. Ranjayan, pleasing. Prajaha, all those who took birth. Nisgriha, without personal ambition. Sarva, all. Kamebhyaha, from sense gratification. Krishnapada, the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna. Anusevaya, by dint of rendering continuous service. Sri Suta Goswami said, Emperor Yudhisthira administered generously to everyone during his reign. He was exactly like a father. He had no personal ambition and was freed from all sorts of sense gratification because of his continuous service unto the lotus feet of the Lord Sri Krishna. Purport. As mentioned in our introduction, there's a need for the science of Krishna in human society, for the good of all suffering humanity of the world. And we simply request the leaders of all nations to pick up this science of Krishna for their own good, for the good of society, and for the good of all the world's people. So it is confirmed herein by the example of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the personality of goodness. Om Jnana Timirantasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kata Mahyam Tathati Shapatantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Jatapada Kamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavanscha Sri Rupam Shagrajatam Shahagana Raghunatan Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savatutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitamsha E Krishna Kuruna Sindho Dina Pandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kam Shana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hori Priye Vancha kolpatirugyascha kripasindho gyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Significantly here, Srila Prabhupada asks that the leaders of all nations pick up this science of Krishna. Yad-yad-acharati shreshtas tad-tad-e-ve-taro jana. Sayat-pramanam kute lokas-tad-anvartita. What the leading people do, the common people follow. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada directs his request specifically to the leaders of all nations, to the top people. The Prabhupada points out in one purport that the principles taught by Lord Buddha spread throughout India because the head of the state patronized Lord Buddha. Emperor Ashoka, when he took to the teachings of Buddha, those teachings were spread widely. So Srila Prabhupada particularly wanted to reach the leaders of the world, and therefore he directs his request in that way. And he says that they should take it up for their own good and for the good of society and the good of all the world's people. And the example is Maharaj Yudhisthira, the personality of goodness. So whatever he did was good for himself, good for society, and good for the world. In India, the people hanker after Ram Raja. There was a political party sometime back, long back in India, the Ram Raja party, which Prabhupada said obliquely wanted the kingdom of Ram, but without Ram. So in India, the people hanker after Ram Raja because the personality of Godhead was the ideal king, and all other kings or emperors in India controlled the destiny of the world for the prosperity of every being who took birth on Nisprah Sarvakamebhyo, not for their own sense gratification, but for the prosperity of all living beings. Herein the word praja is significant. The etymological import of the word is that which is born. Ja means to be born. On the earth, there are many species of life, from the aquatics up to the perfect human beings, and all are known as prajas. Lord Brahma, the creator of this particular universe, is known as Prajapati, because he is the grandfather of all who have taken birth. The Pitama, Krishna's Prapitama. Thus, praja is used in a broader sense than it is now used. The king is meant to protect all living beings, namely the aquatics, plants, trees, reptiles, birds, animals, and man. Every one of them is a part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, Bhagavad Gita 14.4. And the king, being the representative of the Supreme Lord, is duty-bound to give proper protection to every one of them. This is not the case with the presidents and dictators of this demoralized system of administration. where the lower animals are given no protection, while the higher animals are given so-called protection. So that's a sore point. The Prajapati means the all who've taken birth in the lands, not just the human beings. It's not that the human beings should live at the expense of the others who've taken birth without any restriction or without any consideration. They also have a right to live. They also have a right to be happy. So in the upper system of government, all the living beings are afforded protection, not just the higher animals. The higher animals are protected and the lower animals are killed. That's barbaric. But this is a great science, which can be learned only by one who knows the science of Krishna. By knowing the science of Krishna, one can become the most perfect man in the world. And unless one has knowledge in this science, all qualifications and doctorate diplomas acquired by academic education are spoiled and useless. Parava bhaktasya kuto mahatguna manoratena satit pavato. If one comes Krishna conscious, one develops all the good qualities. And if one is not Krishna conscious, then no other qualification is useful. Is useful. They're all useless and spoiled. All mundane qualifications, doctorate diplomas, whatever it is, all of no value. Who told Mahatma? Maharaj Yudhisthira knew this science of Krishna very well. For it is stated here that by continuous cultivation of this science, or by continuous devotional service to Lord Krishna, he acquired the qualification to administer the state like a father. Catch something here? Okay. The father is sometimes seemingly cruel to the sons, but that does not mean that the father has lost the qualification to be a father. A father is always a father because he always has the good of the sons at heart. The father wants every one of his sons to become a better man than himself. Therefore, a king like Maharaj Yudhisthira, who was the personality of goodness, wanted everyone under his administration, especially the human beings who have better developed consciousness, to become devotees of Lord Krishna, so that everyone can become free from the trifles of material existence. Interesting. Now, trifles. I'm not quite sure why Prabhupada uses the term. Whether he has some other idea in mind, or sure the material world is of so little importance, or whether he has trials in mind, I'm not quite sure. But either way, whether material existence is regarded as petty or as full of trials and tribulations, we want to get free from it, and we want to help others become free from it. And the method is Krishna Padanusevaya, the constant cultivation of devotional service, or this anu has two meanings, constant and following. So, of course, there's always more meanings, but anu, constant, anu seva, constant service, and anu seva, service by following in the footsteps of the acharyas, the mahajanas. That's legitimate devotional service. evam parampara praptam imam rajarsyo vidu. So the Dharmaraj, Yudhisthira Maharaj, constantly engaged in devotional service, following in the footsteps of the great devotees. His motto of administration was all good for the citizens. For as personified goodness, he knew perfectly well what is actually good for them. He conducted the administration on that principle and not on the rakshasi, demonic principle of sense gratification. I was in one Middle Eastern country and I noticed that it was reported that the ruler had said, I want my people to have the highest standard of living in the world. I want my people to have the highest standard of living in the world. So from one point of view, it was good. He was thinking about the welfare of his people. And from another point of view, not so good, because standard of living is not the measure of success for human society. And on the contrary, when another bit of Arab history, when oil was discovered in Saudi Arabia, the ruler at the time, I forget whether it was Ibn Saud or one of his descendants, was troubled. He wasn't experiencing unqualified joy. He was troubled because he felt that with oil would come wealth, and with wealth, forgetfulness of Allah. That was his concern. So that's a higher standard of understanding. Not that we just want our people to have the highest standard of living in the world. Perhaps America has one of the highest standards of living, but it's not that it has the highest standard of happiness or the highest standard of advancement in the real necessity of life. That should be the actual concern of the king. Prosperity, definitely. That's his duty also, that there should be prosperity. But also that, or even more important, that people should advance in spiritual culture and spiritual understanding. As an ideal king, Yudhisthira Maharaj had no personal ambition, and there was no place for sense gratification, because all his senses at all times were engaged in the loving service of the Supreme Lord, which includes the partial service to the living beings who form the parts and parcels of the complete whole. So that's the next point. Nispraha sarvakamebhya. In the Bhagavad Gita also, we find the same phrase. Nispraha sarvakamebhyo yukti tyuchate. Tada, in the sixth chapter. Nispraha, without aspirations. What kind of aspirations? Sarvakamebhyo, for sense gratification. Nispraha sarvakamebhyo, leaving aside all concerns for sense gratification and personal aspirations. Just the opposite of the modern leaders, who are full of aspirations for sense enjoyment. His concern was, well, what is my duty? like a father who has to think, how can I best benefit my children? That's the right thinking for a king. Not how can I squeeze out as much from the citizens? How can I realize all of my aspirations? But how can I see to their welfare? And the best way is to be engaged in the loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And by service to him, one will automatically render service to all the other living beings. Those who are busy rendering service to the parts and parcels, leaving aside the whole, only spoil time and energy. As one does when watering the leaves of a tree without watering the root. If water is poured on the root, the leaves are enlivened perfectly and automatically. But if water is poured on the leaves only, the whole energy is spoiled. Maharaj Yudhisthira, therefore, was constantly engaged in the service of the Lord, and thus the parts and parcels of the Lord, the living beings, under his careful administration, were perfectly attended with all comforts in this life and all progress in the next. That is the way of perfect management of state administration. It's interesting here that the sages had asked Sutta Goswami about Parikshit Maharaj and his qualities as a ruler. And Sutta Goswami replies by speaking three verses about Yudhisthira Maharaj. So this is background, how it is that Parikshit Maharaj appeared as the grandson of the exalted devotee, King Yudhisthira. The question was also asked at the birth of Parikshit. Yudhisthira and others were asking, will this Parikshit be a worthy descendant of the dynasty? The parents were so careful to see to it that their offspring would be properly and properly trained. That was their concern. Therefore, they were very particular about performing the various duties of Varnashram in Krishna consciousness so that the marriages would be suitable. From the suitable marriages, qualified children would be born, and the society would progress as a society of spiritual progress, not as a society of cats and dogs who mate indiscriminately and have puppies. They were careful in what Prabhupada called spiritual family planning, how to beget Krishna conscious children and how to train them. So Yudhisthira Maharaj and the others were inquiring, will this Parikshit be a worthy descendant of the Pandava dynasty? That means Yudhisthira Maharaj himself was also filled with the same concern, the same weight was on his head. Am I acting as a worthy descendant of my predecessors, the king would feel so responsible. He's inherited a great duty. Not that it's just an opportunity for sense gratification, but rather it's a duty to be performed, and generously, or with all the qualities among the Kshatriyas, dana, charity is required. It's the sign of a Kshatriya. Gives, distributes generously. Like Kshatriyas would collect taxes, but they would distribute the full benefit of the taxes to the citizens. The way a cloud picks up water from the ocean and then distributes it. So Yudhisthira Maharaj picked up or had that quality, generous administration, and Ishvara Bhav, controlling mentality. Not, the Prabhupada pointed out that the head of state has to be trained and powerful, both. If he's trained but powerless, he's useless. He can't do anything. And if he's powerful but untrained, he's dangerous. So both things are needed. Power and training. So Yudhisthira Maharaj had that. And he had Ishvara Bhav, a take charge mentality. And Pitravad Praja, what does it say? Pitravad Rajanya Praja? Let's see. Yeah. Pitravad Ranjayana Praja. He was like a father to the citizens. But a father is not just a person who gives the children everything they ask for, everything they imagine they want. He's strict also when required. No, you can't do this. No, you can't do that. No, you can't have this. No, you must do that. He's strict. If he's not strict, he's remiss in his duties. The child doesn't know what's good for him. He just wants to play and play. He doesn't want to study. He doesn't want to go to school. He just wants to play. Or maybe he wants to do mischief also. Or get in trouble, get into danger. The father must be strict also. And at the same time, loving, genuinely concerned for the welfare of the child, not simply taking out his own angers or frustration on a poor child, but acting as needed so that the child is properly directed in life. The modern setup imagines that the, or sells people on the idea that the mass of people should, that the best form of government is government of the people, by the people. But the people who are most numerous are the biggest fools. If you took the numbers and represented them graphically as a pyramid, most intelligent and the least intelligent, the least intelligent would be at the bottom of the pyramid, taking up the most space. And the most intelligent would be at the top of the pyramid, only a few. So, when we want majority rule, that means we want the rule by the fools. people who are the least intelligent should add them because they're the most numerous. That doesn't really work, and it's also not how it works, because in the practical application of democracy, the fools are exploited and manipulated and tricked and bribed in so many ways. Manipulated so that their votes will go to the right place as desired by the powerful. And then it's advertised that, yes, we have the best system of governing because we have. Everybody has a vote, everyone has a say. But really, it's the people who have the most money and the most power who have the most say, not the people with the greatest numbers. But it's advertised, yes, everybody has an equal say. Anyway, whether it's true or it's advertised, it's not the best way of doing things. Here, there should be a leader who's powerful and Krishna conscious, God conscious, who has all good qualities. Not just that he professes a particular religion. I'm Hindu, I'm Christian, I'm this, I'm that. But he actually has all the godly qualities, and he has the qualities of a kshatriya, a political leader. He's like a father to the citizens in protecting them, in providing for their welfare, for their prosperity, and in restricting them as need be also for their benefit. These are some of the duties of the king. At the time of Lord Krishna, some Brahmin sons were dying before the father, and the Brahmin came out before the palace gates to accuse the king of maladministration, because no child should die before his father. That was the standard. The king should be so righteous, and therefore the affairs of state so exalted, that rain will be regular, crops will regularly appear, there'll be straightforward dealings, and all necessities will be provided in abundance. Sarva kama duga mahi, mahi. There'll be protection from thieves and rogues. I serve in one country where it's known that law and order is just shot, just gone. That nobody has security of life or property because the government is so incompetent and such a mess. And then people are always in fear of their lives and often lose their lives, or lose their property, or lose, and so many things happen to them because the government is incapable. So the government should be strong. It should deal very strongly with criminals. For the benefit of the criminal himself and for the benefit of the other citizens. For the citizens, the people should be protected. They should feel that, yes, we're safe. They should have prosperity. Not only prosperity for a few, but the cost of the many. Now our democratic system is one man, one vote, and therefore everyone has so much power. Then you look at those people at the bottom of the pyramid, and they've got like nothing as far as the financial assets of the country. The prosperity isn't well distributed. The top 1% have some enormous percentage of the wealth. Even the so-called middle class doesn't have very much. Wealth is concentrated in the hands of a few. That's not right either. So the king should see to it that everyone is generously supplied with the necessities of life, and that everyone especially is engaged in devotional service to the personality of Godhead. By his own example, he should show that, and he should see that the people in general are engaged in that way. That will be progressive. All right, maybe I'll stop here and see if there's some questions. And it's the nature of this medium that is very quiet, and you wait for some typed messages to appear. Maybe they will. And I wonder what thoughts might be bubbling up. What doubts, what questions, what amplifications, what objections. Nisbaha sarvakami bhya Krishna padanu sevaya. Where are leaders to get proper training in management today? Yes, good question. Yes, today. Where are leaders to get proper training in management? First thing is they have to be trained in managing their own senses. That's the first thing. There was a book of history that I was sitting around in the place I was staying. It mentioned the history of the American Revolution. And on the British side, there were two officers, brothers, and one was General Howe and one was Commander Howe. One was in charge of the army, and the other was in charge of the naval forces. Finally, and the naval officer fell into depression, and he became quite addicted to drinking, and all sorts of things happened like that. And the author commented that the commander was not in command of his senses. He took to drinking, womanizing, and so on. Commander was not in command of his senses. So the first thing is that anyone who wants to be a leader needs to learn how to control his senses. Therefore, brahmachari gurukule vasan danta gururitam. The boys would be sent to the gurukul to learn how to control their minds and senses. That's necessary. That's necessary. The simply to lead a pampered life at home with everything supplied by the loving parents will not be to the ultimate welfare of the future man. Therefore, even Krishna was sent to the Gurukul to become the servant of Sandipani. So that's the first thing. Before we get training in management, we have to learn how to manage our senses. Then to be trained in management, that also is necessary. There are so many schools of management, but they're based on this principle of sense enjoyment. So where will leaders get proper training in management today? Good question. I don't really know. But let them first learn how to manage their senses. Then everything else they can learn. How can we encourage our faithful to become leaders? Well, give them something to do. Let them lead. Especially the old men, if the old men monopolize all the positions of authority, all the creative posts, the posts that offer creative opportunities, if the old men stick to their posts till death, yes, we were for life, and so we're not going to leave until they take up self-life support. Then how will anyone get, how will things move forward? There needs to be, the old men need to get out of the way. They need to step aside and guide. They can be there as counselors, as advisors, as kind and expert guides, but not as the fools who hold on for dear life to their titles, their posts, their service. Because if I weren't doing this service, how would I live? Who would give me money? Or what would I do? If I wasn't doing this service, what would I do? I'd have nothing to do. As if Krishna has no other service available. So the old men need to be willing to hand over the keys and let the younger men make mistakes, let them learn, but hand things over. Therefore, by the age of 50, vanaprastha life. By the age of 50, vanaprastha life, you get out of the way and you hand things over. And at that time, we give more importance to bhajan, to hearing, to chanting, to spiritual cultivation, and hand the management over. And the leadership positions over, and the authority over. Don't wait till you're kicked out screaming and kicking. Voluntarily. That will be encouraging. At every level, we're thinking, he hasn't had much experience, he's only 30. When Alexander the Great was like in his late 20s, he was the ruler of most of the known world. It's not that only old men can do things right. And more often old men are so out of touch and so, stuck in their ways, that they're more of an obstacle than an advantage. So old dogs should learn at least one new trick, how to get out of the way. That will encourage new leaders. People will pick it up. Hoofprint Media asks, how to interface with devotees who are perhaps too enthusiastically politically focused? Chant with them, discuss Bhagavatam with them, give them prasadam and, you know, those sort of things. And don't waste your time talking politics. It's useless. And if all they want to do is talk politics, well, interface with other devotees. Let them sort of sleep it off, you know. Let them sleep it off. And you just frankly tell them, not interested, not that interested. No, sorry, don't watch the news, don't really know what's going on, don't really care. Prabhu, could we talk about something else? Whatever. Well, we don't have our time talking politics because someone with who should know better is focused on it. It can seem focusing on leaders could in part miss the point. After all, Krishna consciousness is a process of self-realization. Without realized Brahmins, it appears balance lacking for KC leadership in government. That's leaders doesn't mean just political leaders or managerial leaders. Your self-realized people, your purest people, your people with the clearest vision are supposed to be the ultimate leaders. The administrators are the ones who have power. And they're leaders in another way. But those powerful leaders should also be led, advised, guided by the Brahmins, the self-realized persons. Yeah, good point. Then the government, otherwise government without a head, it means arms without a head, would be another problem. As a side concern, I wonder about worrying too much about apparent wealth at the top when that has been standard in societies throughout history, more or less. Perhaps not so in ideal Vedic culture. First of all, really the top means the people just mentioned, the Brahmins, and they should have no wealth. They should be poor. They should live in austerity and voluntary minimalist material life. So the real top should be poor. And then, yes, the next section down, the Kshatriyas, they should have great wealth. They tax and they collect wealth. But they should distribute it in welfare activities for the benefit of all the citizens. Not that the citizens have to scrape and suffer and go into enormous debt. Just to live. They should distribute it in the form of educational activities, in the form of agricultural activities, and in so many ways, in the form of protection for all the citizens. They should see to it that at least wealth should be wiped out in four sectors. The gambling sector should have nothing. The liquor industry, the marijuana industry, the intoxicant industry should have nothing. the largest growth, the largest prosperity sector, the sex industry, should have nothing. And the meat industry should have nothing. And the dairy industry should be cleaned up. Your casinos should be shut down. Your slaughterhouses should be demolished. Then so much wealth will be released for the benefit of the citizens. And the Shudras, yes, they're very numerous. They shouldn't have wealth. They'll misuse it. But they should have all their needs. They should be happy. They should be told, you must be happy. But they should actually have everything for a happy life. But not an abundance of wealth to spend on liquor and useless things, lottery tickets. The real needs of society is not money only. Real wealth, food, land, grains, that kind of prosperity. We have a totally messed up society, everyone concentrated in cities, living in little blocks, little cubicles to benefit this industry, that industry, 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 factory, factory. This is not the standard of wealth. This is not that kind of wealth concentrates everything in the hands of a few and by imposing suffering on the millions. No. Engaging the millions in manufacturing unnecessary necessities, which then another sector is responsible for selling and on your credit card so you can pay 24% interest to the banking elites. No. People should have land. People should be taught how to cultivate the land, how to protect the cows especially, how to produce the real needs of human society, cloth, food grains, milk. Okay, those are some thoughts. We have only a couple minutes left and there's a couple of questions left. Many leaders claim to follow God but kill their citizens for committing crimes. How does capital punishment fit in with so-called godly society when most, if not all, scriptures state murder is wrong? Vedic scriptures don't say that capital punishment is wrong. It endorses capital punishment. Killing for whimsically is certainly condemned. Killing for one's own sense gratification is certainly condemned. But when citizens commit criminal acts worthy of severe punishment, the punishment should be severe. Not that we just say, oh, he had a tough childhood, this, that. So you slap his wrist and send him out to do it again. The Vedic scriptures, so certainly murder is wrong, but murder is not just defined as killing. The Battle of Kurukshetra was all about killing. Killing is not always wrong, just like cutting is not wrong. Slicing someone with a knife is wrong, but when it's a surgeon, it's very right. So it's a question of who's doing it for what purpose, not that we just say, oh, cutting people up is bad. Cutting people up is very good when it's for their benefit and you're a surgeon and you know what you're doing and it's your right to do it. So of capital punishment is actually good for the society. Certainly, it's so stupid. Put someone in jail for life at a huge cost to the society and breed a class of criminals in your prisons. Because we don't want to kill people. No. Someone goes out and, shoots up a schoolroom, kill the guy. Kill him. It's good for him. The Shastra says it saves him from going to hell. Instead of having to suffer karmic reactions someplace down the line, boom, you get them all now, now you have a clean slate. So there are things for which killing is sanctioned or endorsed, and not only in Vedic scripture, in so many others. Well, we're out of time, and there are more questions. The questions have all appeared rather boom, 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 and we're at 9 o'clock. Difference between Dharmaraj, Yamaraj, Yudhisthira, and Vidura. Dharmaraj and Yamaraj are identical. Yudhisthira is also taken to be, is sometimes called Dharmaraj. Dharmaraj means a king of Dharma. Yamaraj is the original authority on Dharma, so he's called Dharmaraj. And Yudhisthira Maharaj, or any king who lives according to Dharma, is called Dharmaraj. So Dharmaraj, Yamaraj, Yudhisthira, and Yudhisthira is also the son of Dharma, of Yamaraj. And Vidura is also taken as a partial incarnation of Dharmaraj. But he's a different person, of course. Okay, I think that's about as far as we can go. We try to follow the laws, and the law is to stop at 9. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.